Thank you very much. I am glad to be here today. I'm excited, actually, to be able to share with you a story that I think is remarkable and inspiring about the progress that has been made in Ethiopia in less than 10 years since the abortion law there was liberalized. I think it we often get consumed by the obstacles that we face in this field, but I think it's important to realize that we really do have an increasing body of experience expanding access to safe abortion for women, and that we need to remember that. I have no relationships to disclose, and I'm going to spend a little bit of time giving a little bit of background and then talk about some steps that the government of Ethiopia and its partners, including IPAS, the organization I represent, have taken to introduce and scale up legal abortion. Then discuss the impact that these steps have had, some challenges that have been encountered, and draw some lessons that I think might be applicable for other countries that are working to reduce maternal mortality and morbidity from unsafe abortion. So first, by way of background, Ethiopia is the second most populous country in Africa. At the time that the law was liberalized, the population was in 2005, the population was estimated at 70 million. It's now estimated at about 94 million. And given it's a mainly rural population with considerable challenges in ensuring the reproductive health of its women, including quite high maternal mortality. At the time that the law was liberalized, it was 673 deaths per 100,000 live births, and it's not much better than that right now yet. High fertility at 5.4 and a contraceptive prevalence rate at the time of only 14%. But studies spanning about two decades show that unsafe abortion is a major contributor to maternal mortality. In fact, some studies have estimated it to be the fifth leading cause of hospital admissions in Ethiopia and the second leading cause of death among hospitalized women. Estimate has been that it could contribute as much as 30% to maternal deaths. So given this strong body of evidence, in the early 2000s, a multi-sectoral coalition began to coalesce in support of reforming the law, and it included public physicians, the legal community, civil society, women's health advocates, and they advocated for change on both public health and human rights grounds. And the parliament was responsive. In 2000, the vote actually took place in 2004, but the law was gazetted in 2005, which is why that's the 2005 date. But as part of a broader effort to realign the Ethiopia's penal code with its new democratic constitution, the provisions on abortion were liberalized considerably. Previously, the law had allowed abortion only to save the life of the pregnant woman, and in the 2005 revision of the penal code, these conditions, rape and incest, pregnancy endangering the woman's life or health, indications of fetal abnormalities, when a woman is physically or mentally disabled, and in case for minors who are psychologically or physically unprepared to raise a child. So these it's still in the penal code, but it is permitted. These are exceptions. As I said, the law became official in 2005, but services did not begin until 2006, after the Ministry of Health had issued technical guidelines for provision of abortion care. So once that was done, once the law had changed, the government took a number of steps to prepare for and then implement the new law. Thank you very much. The first was within 6 months of the law being made official, they issued these technical and procedural guidelines for safe abortion, which were evidence-based and really quite forward-looking. It was a multi-stakeholder process led by the government, including professional organizations representing the medical community, again, civil society, quite broad range of folks. And these guidelines really sort of laid out the who, what, when, where, why of safe abortion care. They were evidence-based, as I said. They drew heavily on guidelines from the World Health Organization and forward-looking, particularly in that they're really prescient, particularly when it comes to medical abortion. At the time, mifepristone and misoprostol was available. Mifepristone was not available or approved except for research purposes, but the guidelines included made provision for the fact that it would be available. They also were really prescient in the idea in the realm of task shifting, including authorizing mid-level providers to perform first trimester abortion with manual vacuum aspiration. And another thing that's really noteworthy about these guidelines is that they learned from experience at some other countries and really were careful not to codify barriers that have prevented, that have created obstacles for access in a number of other countries. For example, there's a stipulation that no evidence is required to justify any of these legal indications. For example, as I mentioned earlier, minor status is one of the indications for legal abortion, but no woman doesn't have to prove when she was born, which would be difficult in a country with, you know, so little birth registration anyway, or to prove that she was raped, which is a major obstacle in a number of other countries. And also in 2004, just in the past year, there's been an updating process to incorporate new evidence since the original version. Another important step that the government did was to really coordinate the contributions of a number of development partners, really including the folks listed here, according to sort of the technical and geographic expertise. So they were trying to reduce duplication and to promote broad reach, and really to have a role for everybody. IPASS's role has been to support the public sector, primarily public sector provision of comprehensive abortion care in the five regions. And by comprehensive abortion care, what we mean is post-abortion care, so emergency treatment for complications of unsafe abortion, safe elective or induced abortion, post-abortion contraception, and links to other reproductive health services in the community, in the health system. Training in comprehensive abortion care began as soon as the guidelines were available, and as I mentioned earlier, they really emphasized mid-level providers because there was an important emphasis on making care available to women in where they live, and as I said, something like, you know, more than 80% of the population is rural. The initial focus, clinical focus of the training was manual vacuum aspiration for first trimester abortion and post-abortion contraception. This built on the familiarity of the workforce already with manual vacuum aspiration because post-abortion care had been provided in a large proportion of the public health system for quite a while. And later, training was expanded to include medical abortion when the drugs became more available and when the evidence was there, and also second trimester abortion, which is beginning to expand now. This was a particularly important addition, and it was in response to the needs of young people in particular. Young women are more likely to delay recognizing that they're pregnant and then to seeking care, and so there was a lot of experience of women, young women particularly, showing up at the facilities being too late for the care that could be provided at the facility. So this has been a great addition. The public sector training that IPASS supports is women-centered, and beyond the clinical aspects of it also addresses these issues, including provisions of the law, what the law says. It uses a values clarification and attitude transformation methodology, which is something IPASS has used to around the world to help providers and others as well. We've used it with journalists, we've used it with all kinds of people, to really understand sort of the personal and cultural biases and beliefs that they bring to their role, and then to distinguish that from their professional obligations. The training also addresses special needs of youth, management, for healthcare program managers. So what of all these changes? And community outreach has also been another important aspect of this work. IPASS and the other development partners have collaborated closely with community organizations to primarily the emphasis is to let women know about the law, that know where safe services are available, and these organizations working in the communities obviously are the ones who are the best able to communicate that in a way that's culturally appropriate. Health extension workers have also played an important role in that, in just publicizing the availability of services, as well as sensitization of the media. That's been helpful, too. So what this has done, I'm sorry, I'm getting confused between my papers and the screen, and I keep losing my trace. Throughout the whole process, focus on youth has also been really of paramount importance in every step of the process, from policy formulation through development and support to services, and also in outreach. And so what has all this added up to? Well, first, as a baseline, I want to let you know about a in 2008, these partners, including Guttmacher, used a methodology that was similar, I think, to the one that Jesse just described, to do an abortion incidence study, first national abortion incidence study in Ethiopia. And these were the estimates that they came out with. So this was about 2 years after services began. They estimated that there were almost 400,000 abortions. And even though half of all health facilities did provide induced abortion at the time, most of these abortions were happening outside the health facility, so therefore were still unsafe. And you could see that more than 53,000 women were treated for complications. And so this was still an issue. Mortality and morbidity was still an issue that needed to be addressed. The same group of researchers has undertaken a repeat study of this in 2014, this year. And we're working on the analysis of that data now. I'm going to tell you a little bit about that later, but I want to focus now on really what IPAS has done, our contribution, which is illustrative of the progress that has occurred elsewhere in other parts of the country. So over the last 9 years, IPAS has helped train more than 4,000 healthcare workers in our five focused regions. As I mentioned earlier, most of these trainees are mid-level providers, nurses and midwives and health officers, because of our interest in making services available at the primary healthcare level. And these trainings have translated into services being available at almost 600 sites in these five regions. And again, you can see that those are mostly primary healthcare sites. The blue bar is the primary sites. And this shows the trend in women being able to access safe abortion and how the demand for services is growing. And this is a slide that I really want to show you. This is what's been happening. The orange line is the proportion of women seeking abortion-related care who have been seeking post-abortion care, so treatment for complications. As women have learned more about the availability of the law and what the availability of services, and services have become more available, we've seen this shift in the proportion of women seeking safe abortion versus PAC. And that's really exactly what we want to see. And we think it's pretty impressive in really a short period of time. And this, similarly, I'd like you to look at this. The middle line there is medical abortion. It has really taken off. It's been a really godsend in making services available to women in the rural areas as soon as it became available. Another aspect of quality of care is women's ability to get to leave the facility when they come for abortion care, either PAC or comprehensive abortion care with a contraceptive method of their choice. And our data show that 81% of women who come to the IPAS-supported facilities are, in fact, doing that. So I referred to the repeat study, and this is just some preliminary analysis of what we're finding from the repeat study, the incident study. That one thing that's just important is that healthcare providers they feel fine. They feel good about providing abortion services. They know that they're saving women's lives, and so that has not been any kind of an issue in Ethiopia. We haven't had any kind of a significant problem with a so-called conscientious objection. We are seeing significant expansion of both post-abortion care and safe abortion in every sector. Still, though, with most of the public sector providing most of the post-abortion care and the private sector providing most of the induced cases. And we're seeing high rates of post-abortion contraception, and we expect to see increased abortion incidence and lower abortion-related morbidity and mortality. There have been challenges in this program, of course, and primarily the sheer size of the country and the growing demand. And inadequate knowledge of the law remains a significant issue, too. Again, it's a big, vast country with a lot of people, and just making women aware that the law has changed and they now have a legal right to safe abortion is a challenge, and particularly given persistent abortion stigma at the community level. Sustainable technology supply has also been a challenge. There are this commodity supply for both MVA technology and for medical abortion, mifepristone and misoprostol, are good. The supplies are good. The distribution is good. But the government ownership of the purchasing them is not quite where we want it to be yet. So that's still a challenge. These are just some of the factors that I think have been really important in the progress that's been made so far, particularly the really careful preparation for implementing, for introducing the law, and specifically in the form of the technical evidence-based standards and guidelines. The focus on mid-level providers and on medical abortion has been essential. And finally, I just want to, again, note that I think what Ethiopia's experience shows us is that introducing safe legal abortion is politically and logistically feasible in low-resource countries. It can seem a formidable challenge, but it is doable, and significant change really can occur in a pretty short time. And also that this is not it's an impressive story, but it's not an isolated story. Nepal is another example of a country that has liberalized its abortion law and really made great progress in making safe abortion care available to its women, protecting their health and their rights. And finally, I want to close with this quote from a doctor at a very large district hospital I visited a couple of years ago, who said, "We used to have septic wards only for unsafe abortion clients. That was a terrible place, but now that's gone. There are no more young, vibrant women with complications of unsafe abortion at the terminal stage. We don't see that in our facilities anymore." That's exactly what IPAS and our partners in Ethiopia and around the world are working for. Thank you. I'm sorry?
What gestational limit
for the DNE? I think it's 28 weeks, I think, is the limit there, but I'm not positive about that. Yes? I said that the government really has determined, sort of told us and other development partners, and Gender Health is the other major international NGO working in the area, sort of who works where. And we actually do provide technical support more at the national level, too. There are still some regions, I think, that their coverage is not services aren't as available as they should be. So I'm hoping that will happen. Right now, I think it's dependent on, funding for one thing, and the directive from the government. We're working at the behest of the government. So, but they are very. The government actually is very supportive of the program, and are committed to it. So I don't. Hopefully that will happen. The majority of the private providers are the family. And their NGO providers, or our Family Guidance Association of Ethiopia, which is an IPPF member association, and the other is Mari Stopes International Ethiopia. So they are providing, I think, the bulk of the private sector abortions. There are, of course, private clinics and smaller private NGO clinics too, and we are involved in training them to some degree as well. But our focus is primarily on the public sector. Thank you.